Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Cinema Wave Podcast. We are here to talk to you guys about M. Night Shyamalan's newest film, the psychological thriller called Trap. I am one of your hosts. My name is Darren Scalamoni. I am joined this time by Vinny Albano.
Hello, hello.
So, Vinny, we're going to jump right into it. For the people that don't know, I mean, I'm sure you are aware of who M. Night Shyamalan is. He does a lot of psychological thrillers. He does a little bit of horror stuff. And so much of what his trademark is as a director are twists, and he became synonymous with that with his first ever film, which people still mostly regard as his greatest movie ever made. 1999's The Sixth Sense. The first thing I asked you before we started recording, and I'll just ask you on now that we're recording, M. Night Shyamalan as a filmmaker, what have you seen in terms of his work? What have you seen? And also, what are your thoughts on him as a director going into Trap?
Yeah, so I've seen The Sixth Sense, I've seen Unbreakable, I've seen Split, I've seen Glass. I think that's the most that I've seen from him. However, he's a filmmaker that I obviously know a lot about. I mean, even from my family recommending other films that I haven't seen, like Signs or The Village, constantly his films are always kind of in rotation in my watch list, although I haven't got around to anything except for the ones I named. But from the ones I named, he's kind of up and down. He's like 50-50 for me, because I hated Glass. Like, I absolutely hated that movie, but I also enjoy The Sixth Sense, and I enjoy Unbreakable, and I enjoy Split, but to very varying degrees of enjoyment. So, and what I've heard from his recent stuff on recent reviews of Old or of Knock at the Cabin, I've heard very mixed, more negative things. So, yeah, that was my stance on Shyamalan going into this.
Yeah, I haven't seen too many more projects of his than you. I did have a chance to see Old for the first time last year, which it's kind of a shit show. So that is what it is. I've seen all three of the films in the superhero trilogy, so to speak, that he's made. The ones you've said, Unbreakable, Split, and Glass. But him as a filmmaker, not only like in terms of his content, but his choices too, he's kind of gone in all different directions. Like with The Sixth Sense, he became this filmmaker where people were talking about the twist that he was able to make. And he kind of goes from The Sixth Sense to immediately going into Unbreakable, which is a very different movie than The Sixth Sense is. Then he goes to Signs and then The Village. And if you look on his IMDb page, 8.2, 7.3, 6.8, 6.6. The numbers are dwindling as you go along. Then he does Lady in the Water, which a lot of people were not a fan of. But then he goes in this very weird direction in terms of trying to be this big budget sci-fi director, which I thought was an interesting pivot. And interesting that when his career was kind of fledgling a little bit, somebody gave him the reins to do things like this. You've seen one of the ones I'm going to talk about.
The Last Airbender.
I was going to say. Yeah. So he does The Happening, which a lot of people regard as one of the worst movies ever made. Mark Wahlberg and Zooey Deschanel. The Last Airbender, which is probably another candidate for the worst movie ever made.
Movie.
And then another film that's probably a candidate for the worst movie ever made, After Earth, with Will Smith and Jaden Smith. So that is, for most directors, if that is a trilogy or three films in a row that you're making, you usually don't get another shot, right? But he decides to pivot again. He goes straight horror with The Visit, and then he starts to get bigger budgets. More people want to work with him again, especially after Split. He gets a pretty good cast for Old, then he does Knock at the Cabin, and now the movie we're going to talk about, which is Trap, which doesn't have a big budget. It doesn't have a major starry cast, but it does give Josh Hartnett his first chance to star in a film in a very long time. Another guy that, like, in some ways is similar to the M. Night thing in terms of he was the Hollywood star boy for quite a while. He was this heartthrob. He started in things like Virgin Suicides, and then he was doing things like Pearl Harbor. And then he sort of shifted away from doing things like that, and he was forgotten by Hollywood. Last year with Oppenheimer, he was regarded as one of the best performers in the film. I loved him in the movie. And he gets an opportunity to star in this film with Shyamalan. What were your broad thoughts, without spoiling necessarily, I guess, the twists of this film that we just saw last week?
Yeah, so for the most part, I'm pretty negative on this film. I was engaged, I will say. I don't think it's a terrible piece of filmmaking. I don't think it's as bad as Glass, even, or I don't even think it's as bad as The Last Airbender. which I completely forgot I've seen. And I go off on that in when they redid the live action for Netflix. But I was engaged, and there was stuff I liked about it. I think Josh Hartnett, with the script he's given, he does a great job, you know, with the script that he's given. Now, with the script that he's given, there's a lot of weak points, and a lot of the time, I was just rolling my eyes, not only at the plot and the conveniences of this plot, but the dialogue is just... The dialogue feels like robotic, and it's like it's tough sometimes. It's really tough.
Yeah, there's actually things I've been seeing online that, and it's probably from the younger generations, but asking, was this a film written by AI? Which is funny because it's just like, no, M. Night is just a really bad screenwriter. I agree with what you're saying though. It's definitely not a film that I enjoyed. I might have liked it a little bit more than Old. And I said this off camera and I want to repeat it while we're doing the review. I think M. Night's kind of plots that he decides to create, or these themes that he creates in his films, are very unique stories to adapt to film. I said the elevator pitch for this film was basically like, what if Norman Bates took his daughter to the Eras Tour? Yeah. And I'm like, that's a great elevator pitch, especially in the current time we're in, with Taylor Swift being such a big star. And casting someone like Hartnett is kind of a risk because he hasn't led a film in so long. But I do think that his performance keeps the heart beating a little bit more in terms of this movie and the momentum going forward. But there's definitely moments, and I saw it in a packed theater. I don't know if you did. But like, there are moments where some people are laughing where you're not sure if they're supposed to be laughing or if it's just because it's awkward. There are some moments where there's a bigger reaction to certain things, but for other people, it's very predictable. That's kind of just how M. Night is as a filmmaker. But the storyline in general, if you guys haven't watched the trailers, basically Hartnett plays this guy named Cooper, who also has this... he is a second personality, essentially, or a second life, where he plays a serial killer named The Butcher. And he takes his daughter to this massive concert for an artist, a pop star named Lady Raven, very inspired by a lot of current pop stars. And he finds out that the FBI has this, or the SWAT is there to essentially trap him within this concert venue with his daughter so he can't escape, and they can arrest this guy who's killed 12 people over a 7-year span. Now, again, in terms of that being an elevator pitch, I think it sounds great. Execution is another story, like you talked about. And we'll go into spoilers now. So if you guys haven't seen the film, obviously return to it. But for me, like, one of the biggest things was the way he filmed certain interactions, and the interactions feel robotic. You know what I mean? Like a conversation between Hartnett's character and the mother of these other children, or the conversation he has with one of the workers at the concert.
Yeah.
What were some moments that stuck out to you as like, oh my God, this is not as effective as it should be?
A lot. So were you going into the nitty?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Okay. So there was just so many scenes where they're trying to paint him as a very intellectual serial killer, right? And they're trying to paint not only the FBI profiler, but the all of like this plan that is happening as a really smart, intelligent plan. But neither of them are really that intelligent. Only when, you know, because the plot is convening them, and there's so many conveniences where, you know, you can barely get through TSA at the airport, and yet serial killer's on the loose, and it's this elaborate plan, and yet no one's getting patted down for anything, and he's able to, like, it's just, there's so many moments that actually had me, like, angry, because I was like, this is just, like, it's so simple, like, why aren't you, like, there's, people are saying too much, like, just shut your mouth, like, don't say that, or like, you know what I mean? I understand as a film you have to have some leeway so that a film can play out, but I wish that for how intellectual that the characters are, that they're trying to tell us that these characters are, but you don't really feel it, you know?
Yeah.
And there was just so many moments that just kind of just like very stale, robotic dialogue, and I don't know if that was the actors, they're trying to do their best. Even sometimes the direction in those scenes feel weird. If we're going really technical, just because I'm kind of rambling right now, yeah. Just if we're going really technical, there were some scenes where like the blocking of the was
super
really,
awkward.
Yeah, very awkward. And I was like, what is this? Is this like a video game? Like I see like there's the extras, like the scene where the woman is pushed down the stairs.
Yes.
And like they're just like standing there like this. Like and like it's but it's so like position the camera differently, position your actors differently. Like so many parts in the scene where something's going on and the things, the mise-en-scene, I feel like I'm getting way too pretentious right now, but it's true. It's what I'm thinking about because I'm looking at this. I'm using technical terms to kind of describe what I really mean here. But the mise-en-scene and how it's interacting within this frame, may it be the props or the extras, how they're positioned, it just feels weird and awkward and like, so many times that it just broke the illusion of like, okay, that's a performance.
There's even certain scenes where like and again, I'm not trying to sound pretentious either, but it's like the ADR is not matching and it's so obvious that it doesn't match. And that happens even sometimes in great movies, but it's not as noticeable as it is here. One of the other things in terms of blocking, and this is no disrespect to the young actress, Ariel Donahue, who plays Riley, his daughter, but it's like in the beginning of when they first get to the concert venue and there's like the girls doing the dance. And she's like, Dad, oh my God, look at this. And she gets in line with these girls and she's doing like this like TikTok sort of dance where they keep the camera framed on them without cutting. And it's just like, this feels very unnatural.
Yeah.
And it makes it stand out like a sore thumb instead of like making it feel more like a film and cinematic if you start cutting to different angles. But I feel like so much of it was just M. Night like framing a shot and being like, we got it. Move on. Let's do this. We got to film this movie in 21 days, folks. Let's get this done.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I totally agree with you in terms of all that. The one convenience that I have to point out, because it's so insane that like, I was laughing. I saw the movie with my brother and my cousin. And as soon as he makes this move, I'm like, this is like crazy. Like, I can't believe this is happening. Where he goes to the merch table and he's talking to the guy who works at the merch table. And he's like, honey, like, it's okay. There's only one small shirt left. And then the merch guy is like, oh, don't worry. I got more in the back. Come see me in 10 minutes. He's like, and I'll give you your shirt. So he goes to his seat. He comes back and then he goes, oh, thanks for coming back, man. I got to get you your shirt. By the way, why don't you come backstage with me and I can come get you the shirt. Mm-hmm. And it's like, in what venue, what concert venue, what place of business ever? It doesn't even need to be a concert venue. Like where do you walk into, Aeropostale or anywhere else that serves clothing where they're going to be like, oh, you know what? Let me check in the back. You want to come with me? That doesn't happen. That's not reality.
Yeah.
So that moment to me, I was like, what is happening right now? And then they try to like add on to the tension where he hands him the
box cutter.
And you think he's going to slit his throat, but he's like, nah, you're a good guy. Thanks for the shirt. And he's like, nah, it's all good, man. And he gives him all this exposition. Like you talked about, like, he's like, here's the password so you can get past SWAT. We're looking for the butcher. He's apparently a serial killer. I'm kind of obsessed with the guy. And it's like, this is all way too much.
Yeah. He's just 100%. Rattling off information. Like, look, it's so, like, we're talking about, like, unnatural and robotic. That scene felt, that was when I really began to feel it. Because, like, before that, I was like, oh, maybe they're just trying to hone up the real goofy, like, dad-daughter kind of, like, right? Because maybe they were trying to purposely make it, like, cliche, robotic, cheesy, so that when it's revealed that he's the butcher, that's going to be like, whoa, right? For people who haven't seen the trailers. But, yeah, no, that just persisted throughout the whole film.
Yeah, like, there's a moment before that, which is, all, again, like you talked about it, it's all conveniences, but then there's also, like, the far-fetchedness of all of it. Like there's the one time where he swipes the card from the employee and he goes in the back and there's this huge meeting with all the SWAT members.
Oh yeah.
And he's in the background and I understand he has an ID now that he's swiped or a card that he swiped, but he's not dressed like he would be an employee of the concert venue and he's just back there listening to all the information. If you see a man that looks like this, be aware. He's going to know where every exit is. You need to make sure you take care of this guy. And he's just in the background, just smiling and just listening. And it's like, all right, that's already crazy. Then he goes and gets the coffee and he knows where the sugar is, which I thought was also like, I was like, what? How is this possible right now? You know what I mean? But then they start to play into these things. And like you said, you're not really sure if it's for humor. And even if it was for humor, so much of the first half of that film does those things where it plays that other side of Cooper, where it's like, he's like, oh, I'm like trying to just make sure my daughter has a good time. He's saying, can I say jelly as something that resembles the word jealous for your generation? And she's like, dad, that's corny. But then when you get to the second half of the film and they leave the concert venue, it turns into a whole different thing.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's two different movies, but neither one of them is successful in what they're trying to accomplish. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let's talk about the second half.
Okay.
Because I thought I was going to enjoy it more. I actually ended up enjoying it less
than the first half.
Yeah.
I've heard that criticism by most people that have been talking about this movie, honestly.
Yeah. Like once they got out of the venue, I was like, okay, this can get really interesting now. Right. And I will say, like, For plot's sake, it is fairly interesting. Like I said, I was engaged, and it isn't outright, although I am criticizing the filmmaking, it isn't outright terrible filmmaking. It's just very subpar and mediocre, you know. But you know, there's some clever things, like some clever shots and some composition that I really enjoyed. Just off the top of my head, I like how when he's talking to the other kid's mom, he's lit with shadows on his eyes, like very top-down lighting where the brow casts shadows on the eyes so you don't see his eyes.
Yeah.
I thought that was very clever because it's like at that moment, we don't know his intentions and it's kind of dark. It's in a very subtle way to establish a character that kind of has a darker side. Like stuff like that, but like I said, it's so little that it doesn't help the big story at play. So the second half, once they get there, we're talking about conveniences. It's like convenience after convenience. It's like, why, like at that point, when they first take him down, right, they tase him and like, that's like the end of the movie essentially. Yeah. At that point, he has a butcher knife. He is attacking you guys. You guys know he's the butcher, like confirmed. Like he admitted it. It's proven. Like he has a butcher knife. He's aggressive. He's like trying to pop this guy's eyeballs out with his thumbs. Just shoot him at that point or do something. You could legally use force at that point. You can legally use force. Like, or do something. Like, the tasers are clearly not working. I don't know. It just started to, like, obviously, sorry, I'm getting really heated.
You're very passionate. I love it. What I was going to say, well, I don't want to cut you off, but it's like, because I understand that perspective of it too, but it goes back to the fact that they just take logic and they throw it out the window with this movie, right? Even more, like, simpler than that, right? Let's say you decide, again, you don't want to kill off, and that's not the exact end point of the movie, obviously, because then they shove him in the back of a SWAT truck by himself with nobody else around him and he escapes the handcuffs. So that's the moment where it's like, I can understand your sentiment too. It's like this, especially when he jumps on the dude, and he's trying to gouge his fucking eyes out. It's like this guy literally is trying to make this other officer blind. Like you can shoot this guy in the head. But it's the moment where they're like, all right, we got him, load him up. And he gets in the back of the truck and then they're just like, hey, Johnny, how was your day? And they get back in the car with nobody in the back with him to be monitoring this guy that you just needed a whole SWAT team to show up at a concert. It goes back to the plot of the movie. It's like you had thousands of SWAT team members show up to a 30,000 person event because you knew that you couldn't let this guy escape. You do let him escape. And then when you have a moment where you actually have him in your possession, you go, why don't we leave him alone?
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense. And it takes that criticism that we have been saying about it, where it's just, it's convenient and it's just taking logic to a different level where it's like, again, like you said, you can suspend disbelief for a lot of things, especially in regard to psychological thrillers and horrors and comic book movies. Like, there's certain genres where it sort of fits the narrative more than less. This challenges the viewer to basically act stupid to enjoy the film and or go into it, which I know, like, because I'm aware of people that have seen this movie and like it a lot. I think those people go in with just, again, like, completely throwing everything that would be a thought out of their brain, and they're just like, I'm just going to enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a pure M. Night Shyamalan movie. Like, that's definitive. Yeah. But it really challenges the viewer. Like, if you're going in expecting this thing where you're like, wow, this is a deep plot. Like, they could do something really big with this. And like you said, when they leave the concert venue, I mean, he goes from leaving the concert venue, not thinking he's going to escape, to escaping with the pop star that his daughter idolizes in his possession. And this is a guy that's killed 12 people prior. So that in and of itself should be adding to the plot. But as you said, like, the second half of the film doesn't sort of build off of that momentum. It just kind of stalls out, and it tells us the exact same thing we already know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And piggybacking off of that, like, you know, you talked about how he's just left alone in the SWAT car, and like, what happens to that whole second half of the film? It's like the whole idea. This goes back to what I was saying of, like, they try to make it out where this procedure is very intelligent, and you know that this FBI profiler has taken down 10 serial killers before this, and it's really smart. It's a super smart plan, right? But basic procedure that any cop would do, let alone SWAT team, FBI would do, is thrown out the window every single time in that second half. Like the one you mentioned where, one, they let him get to a bike, and I know, like, the mom or someone shouts, like, oh, let him be. No, don't let... That would never happen. Yeah. That would never happen.
He's like, I need to pick up my daughter's bike. It's laying on the grass.
Yeah, because he has OCD. Yes. And on top of that, you don't pat him afterward. That's a mechanical thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Bikes have so much spikes and there's so much that you could easily strip from a bike just like that. And you don't pat him down. You don't search him after that either. Right. Like, you don't expect him to do, like, I immediately, like, it just became so predictable. That's the word I was looking for. It became so predictable. I already knew that we were going to leave off on this M Night, like, very, like, cliffhanger. And it's like, oh my God, he got the lock pick in his sleeve. Really? Oh, who would have thought of that? Oh, guess what? Yeah, it was so obvious. It was so obvious. And then, you know, that's the second biggest convenience. And the first convenience where they throw procedure out the window is with the whole limousine sequence, right? Where Lady Raven is the one to basically take him down, right? Like, expose him in front of his family, call the SWAT team to the house, right? SWAT team arrives. She is the one to do that, right? And yet the SWAT team just, no further questions. Okay, you go now. No, what? Yeah. They would have her there for hours questioning her. Okay. What else did you see on his phone? How'd you get into his phone? Yada yada. She's just let off immediately, and obviously he is the limousine driver. And sorry, I'm really going on a tangent right now. But wrapping up my thought is, you know, the second thing you said was about oh my God, I'm losing my thought.
I don't know if it had to do with the logic being thrown out the window, but just so much of this film, as we've echoed now for basically the whole review, but it's convenience after convenience, throwing logic out the window. And if you want to have a good time with this movie, you have to suspend all of that. Like, you have to just be like, all right, I'm going into this movie, and some of the characters are going to be very corny. The pros for me, again, like I said, is Hartnett. I think that he plays a Norman Bates-esque figure that has a mommy issue pretty well. And he plays these two characters well, even though the Cooper side of the character is so corny in moments and feels so robotic. But I do think that was a choice and I think it worked better for him than it did for anybody else. It was cool to see Shyamalan do something at least with, or maybe it's in Hartnett's case, like putting the pressure of the movie on one person's shoulders. It reminds me of what happened with Split with McAvoy. I think McAvoy's performance was better and obviously a lot more nuanced, but I do think that this movie could have been as bad as some of those previous films that Shyamalan had done if it weren't for Hartnett's performance. I think he elevates it to a certain degree because you believe it. And when you do get the second half of the film, the scene with him and Allison Pill, who plays his wife, when they're having the pie and he's kind of intimidating her, I thought was really, really well done. And you could believe the tension.
Really?
Yeah, I did. You disagree with that?
I was actually going to say something about that.
Okay, so you don't like that scene.
I don't like... Well, I think that scene was better than most scenes due to, like you're mentioning, the performances are strong. The performances for what the script that they are given, they really pull... They are the meat of this story, really. But for that scene, I was constantly thinking... That was like the real point in the film where I just was kind of over it. I was like kind of over it at
over
that
the
point.
Conveniences,
just kind of everything.
Okay,
and because I hear this creeping tension music that they're playing, they're not cutting away from his face as he's giving that monologue to Rachel, right? And they're trying to make it really dramatic. But I didn't feel any of that because I think of other horror films, and I think of recently, Pearl had a great scene that was very similar to that, where at the very end of the film, when Pearl is exposed in front of a family member that she is a psychopath killer, she has this scene where in that film, Ty West does not cut from her performance at all, but there's not any music either in that scene from Pearl, and you just feel that tension, and it doesn't feel slow either. You're like shocked. You're shocked in that scene with her. Mia Goth's performance is great. And although Josh's performance in this is great, that scene reminded me of the scene from Pearl. And I thought of how much of the impact I got from that scene from Pearl. And I thought of the amount of impact I got from this scene. And it was little to none.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I just, because everything that came before that was so just, you know, filled with convenience and filled with just kind of writing that I didn't care for. So when that scene happened of like, this is it.
It wasn't dynamic enough for you to sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I get it because it's not a film that feels as elevated despite it having like a smaller budget as something like a Pearl, because Pearl I think is just effectively a better movie overall. So I do get it. I think just for me, the acting in that scene was like it's better than most of the acting in the movie.
Oh yeah.
And you do have two of the stronger performances. I believe her name is it Saleka? Saleka Shyamalan plays Lady Raven in it. It's either her acting debut or one of the first times she's been on screen. I think she has a really great voice. I think she's a great music artist because she plays this pop star in the film, but I think her acting has a lot of work to do.
Yeah, so, it is her first film.
It is, yeah. So, and again, of course, it's interesting that like the twist, the big, I guess you can call it the twist, because again, if you watch the trailers, you're aware that Cooper is also the butcher. But the big twist is that Cooper conveniently runs into Lady Raven's uncle in the seats and goes and makes a lie about his daughter, saying she just recovered from leukemia. Like it would. Like this means a lot to her. Like she loves Lady Raven, and M. Night is playing the uncle, and he's like, "Well, would you want to, you want her to be the dreamer girl, so we can get you backstage? Because that's the only way you can escape the venue. How about that? How does that work?" And then you get the Kid Cudi scenes, which I thought were actually funny. But it's
I was not expecting Kid Cudi to show up. That was really funny, actually.
It's so ridiculous. And the scene with the kombucha, and he looks back and like kind of gives Hartnett this sexual look, and you're like, what the hell is happening? And then you never see him again in the movie. But yeah, it's just, there's not a lot of great or even good stuff in this film. I think so much of this movie is emblematic of his career in general, though, like Shyamalan. Like There's some things that work well. There's some things that don't work well. It's very much a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. There's some performances that are great. There are some performances that are terrible. There are certain sequences where the, like the, what's the below the line filmmaking is done really well. And there's other scenes where the above the line filmmaking is done really well. So I don't know if there's anything else I have to say. Is there anything else you have to say?
No, I echo all the same, everything you just said. I echo that. And yeah, Trap.
You want to give your score?
It's definitely a movie.
It is definitely a movie. Yeah.
I give my score.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm giving this a 4 out of 10.
Okay. So I'm going to go a little above you. Because I think it's and I usually give the higher scores. Liz always jokes about it, but I think it's like mid. Like I'll never watch the movie again. But there, I respect the performance from Hartnett, so I'm gonna give it a 5, right in the middle. I gave Rebel Moon a 4, and I just think that's a way worse movie than this is.
Yeah.
So even like, I mean, 5 feels like a big jump, but to me, it's like I'll probably never watch this movie again. I respect Hartnett's performance. I still love the theme of what this movie could have been, the idea of what it was. And I agree. I think the first half of the movie, despite some awkward robotic dialogue and conveniences, it works better and more effectively than the second half does. So I get all that.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Well, that's our review for Trap, our review and discussion. Please be sure to let us know in the comments, what was your guys' thoughts on Trap? I've heard very mixed things all over the place. It's a very divisive movie. It's a movie that, again, like I said, is pretty emblematic of M. Night's career, whether he's had hits or misses. But let us know in the comments what you guys thought of the film overall. And if you can give this video a like, we really appreciate it. We are also on the road to 500 subscribers here at the Culture Wave Media Network. So be sure to hit that subscribe button down below. We cover all things film and TV. We have a bunch of other reviews up currently. We just did our season 2 finale review and discussion for House of the Dragon, which I did with Vinny here, as well as Liz and Mark. So be sure to check that out. We're also going to be covering the D23 stuff next week, and also It Ends With Us soon, as well as some other indie films as well that our crew is going to be covering going forward. So be sure to check that stuff out. And you guys can follow us on social media at all our platforms, all our handles. That information is going to be down below on this video and also in our description. Follow us on Instagram, on Facebook, on Threads, TikTok, all those places. Be sure to check us out there as well. Just signing off, I am Darian Scalamoni.
And I'm Vinny Albano.
And we'll see you guys next time.
This is The Culture.